Hello and welcome to Ex-Tumblr Girls, a podcast hosted by two ex-Tumblr girls turned modern Tumblr women who still listen to the same playlist from 2015. I'm your host, Tori.
I'm your host, Carly.
Let's talk about Tumblr. So if you haven't guessed from the title of this episode, just want to say this is the second part to an episode that we started last week. So we highly recommend you go and listen to part one first and hear about the first three pop queens that we talked about. This week we'll be talking about two more. But before we really get into the topic, we've got some other just random things that we wanted to chat about.
Yes. So last week when I was talking about Marina, I said that I couldn't find anything on her first EP, which she originally posted on MySpace. Apparently I was lying because I just Googled the name Mermaid versus Sailor, and I found the entire album on SoundCloud or like something like that. And I think that everybody should go watch the they're like only on YouTube, so you have to like watch the kind of music videos, but not really. The graphic design is so 2012 or whatever the actual year was that it came out. It's pretty bad, but because it's Marina, I'll excuse it. And also the sound quality is awful. It sounds like she recorded it like on her flip phone or something. It was pretty bad. But I think she should re-release them, like, now that she can actually use, like, a recording studio.
Wait, didn't you say... Oh, no. She would have been self-recording at that time. Because this was before the first... Okay, so I guess it's understandable.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
What I said last week still stands. If anyone has one of the original physical copies... I will be scouring for them.
I did see one person posted it, and I think they had it listed for like 200, and it was a CD. I don't have the kind of money to be dropping that for a CD. I don't even own a CD player, so that wouldn't work. But I still would love to have it one day.
Yeah. We'll set that as a – that'll be like a goal of, you know, you've made it when.
Yeah. Yeah, when I have that kind of money to spend.
Another piece of Tumblr icon merch that is hard to come by these days that I forgot to mention last week was that during the Tumblr era, Lana Del Rey had released a necklace that was like a little heart-shaped with an L on it. But if you unscrewed the piece that attached it to the chain, it had a little spoon in it. Because it was a necklace for holding cocaine.
Very Lana.
I think about how, like, I was 15 years old and I was like, oh my God, I want this Lana Del Rey locket. And then can you imagine if, like, it popped open or something and my mom saw I was wearing, like, Coke necklace? Oh my God. I can't believe she had teenagers wearing that stuff.
To be fair, I don't know if your mom would really think you were doing coke at age 14.
I know she wouldn't, but like just the idea of like having a locket with a coke spoon in it as like a teenager, it's like wild.
It's a little ridiculous. But it was still like, iconic, and I still wanted one.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. They were really cute.
Yeah.
What else?
Have you heard about Sam Levinson's new show on HBO?
I thought it was a movie.
Well, he's had movies come out recently, but this is about the show The Idol.
Right, with The Weeknd and Lily Rose Depp?
Yeah, yes. Have you seen anything about it?
I'll tell you what I know about it is that I heard it used to have a female director. And that they fired the female director because it got too female gazy, and they hired Sam Levinson. And the headline I saw was torture porn.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, so the Weeknd was the one that decided to fire the female director because it was too much of a female perspective.
Yeah, I'm not entirely surprised that the Weeknd wouldn't want a feminine perspective on things, considering, like, if you listen to his lyrics, he, like, kind of talks horribly about women.
Yeah, I'm not super surprised by that either. Also not really surprised by Sam Levinson, because all of his shows and movies are pretty much the same. And it's pretty much just him trying to push the envelope as much as possible and do things that are just outside of the norms. I read an article that the theory was basically just because he's a Nepo baby and, you know, he just wants to maybe experience, like, what it feels like to do something new. I don't know. I think that it's just an excuse to fantasize about killing and raping women.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think what so often happens with male directors is that they get praised for being, like, subversive, when in reality, yeah, they're just acting out, like, really weird, dark, twisted fantasies that real men have. And then they're being like, oh, but isn't it so crazy to see it enacted on the big screen? And I'm like, no, I see it in my nightmares every night.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm good.
Yeah. The thing is about this show is that it's, like, super behind schedule because Sam Levinson keeps wanting to add things. And I'm not going to even say it on the pod because I don't even think it's, like, worth talking about. Like, if you want to know the specifics of the scenes, you can go look it up. It's disgusting and completely violating to Lily Rose Depp as an actress that, like, should not be asked to be doing these things. And it's not the first time that it's happened to an actress in one of his projects.
Yeah, it's, like, exactly what he did to Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, and Zendaya.
Yeah.
So I know that HBO has put in a lot of their marketing materials that, like, the two people most involved, which is Sam Levinson and The Weeknd, have, like, twisted minds. Like, that's been a big part of their marketing. And now,
why are they proud of that?
I don't know. It's HBO. That's the only reasoning I could come up with. But I have a feeling the show, if it ever ends up being released, is going to be a huge flop.
I hope. Someone told me that it was, like, Sam Levinson kept saying that if they wouldn't, like, pass through certain changes, he wouldn't give them the next season of Euphoria. And I was like, fucking keep your next season of Euphoria. The last season ended horribly. Like,
yeah,
I'm not interested in the next season.
Yeah. I never finished the first season of Euphoria just because I am really not a fan of just the situations that he was putting these teenage female characters in. Like,
yeah,
I just couldn't watch it and, like, you know, I couldn't stomach it. So I'm definitely not going to watch this new show of his that seems to be even worse. But yeah, I think it's just because he has a director dad and he can really get away with whatever he wants because he probably has enough money to do it.
Yeah. Nepo baby plus being a man already equals getting to do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
But one thing HBO Max can do right is The Last of Us. And I won't turn the intro of every one of our episodes into a conversation around The Last of Us. But what I will say is, being on Tumblr after Sunday night's episode was so great. I felt so alive. I felt like I was live vlogging again. There were gift sets directly after the episode air. There was already fan art. There was, like, in-depth analyses of the last, like, 5 minutes. And I was just, I've been blogging about it all day. It's so invigorating.
I know. And this is what I've been talking, like, this is what I've wanted, because for the past, like, year and a half, I have had an unhealthy obsession with The Last of Us. And the show is just being announced when I got into it. And I'm like, I have hope. I have hope that this is going to bring back the fandom. And it fucking did.
It worked.
And Tumblr, like, The Last of Us, like, gift sets and posts are getting a lot of notes, too. Like, people are really engaging with the content.
Yeah.
Which is so great to see.
It's me. I'm engaging with the content. Oh, my God. It's so, so good. And, like, I'm seeing, like, legitimately interesting analysis of different, like, lines and different scenes and, like, actually valid discourse about certain decisions. Like, it's really awesome to see Tumblr actually function the way it was, like, always meant to.
Yeah. And for it to be a show that isn't on the same level as Teen Wolf. Like, don't get me wrong. Season 3 of Teen Wolf was amazing. Season 3 was, and that was about it. But, like, an adult show that deals with, like, bigger themes and isn't, you know, from MTV.
Yes.
It's great to, like, see discourse like that on Tumblr. Because that's the type of show that, like, you want to talk about. It's not just talking about ships or anything.
No, definitely. It's got, like, actual intellectual value. And also, like, I cannot wait to see Bella Ramsey collect their awards in, like, next year's award season, because they deserve all of the praise.
They have to get one after last night's episode.
Yeah. Like,
I was sobbing hysterically.
Oh my God. I sent you, like, I texted Carly, like, live reaction photos. And they were, like, I was just, my eyes grew wider and wider, my jaw dropped, and then, like, there were moments where the fear and horror turned into, like, that was a little sexy, and then back to fear and horror.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal will do that to you. Joel will do that to you.
A man with many capabilities. But I won't go on for too long. I'll share what other types of media I've been consuming. I read a whole book since last week.
Wow.
I'm back on my speed reading grind, and it was a 5-star for me.
Awesome.
I picked it up at the library just kind of randomly, and it was called Something Unbelievable by Maria Kuznetsova. And it was a really, really fantastic book. I read it in just a few days. I think it was only maybe 300 pages long. I highly recommend, if someone is looking for a really interesting fiction novel that's written from, it's my favorite thing right now is generational perspective, where it's written by, like, it's from the perspective of a grandmother and her granddaughter, and it goes back and forth on their lives, and they kind of mirror each other. It's really fantastic.
I might have to read it, because I'm still struggling through Atonement.
I think it's time to switch books.
The thing is I really do want to finish it. I just don't think I can right now with, like, everything that else that's going on in my life.
I think it's good to have easy reading when there's a lot going on. Something that, like, you can do kind of, like, low effort, you know?
Yeah.
I just started another book today, or maybe I started it last night, that I really wasn't sure of for the first, like, 10 pages, but now I'm, like, 90 pages in, and I'm hooked. So we'll report back on that
book. I'm so jealous.
I literally, this is what I do every night, though. Like, on Mondays, we record. Tuesday and Wednesday, I edit. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I have nothing to do.
So you read.
Like, outside my work hours, that is. So yeah, I just read all the time. But I lied. This week, I did have something to do on the weekend. And that was, I saw Miss Eliza McLam in concert in Brooklyn. And it was a no barricade venue. Like, it was just the back room of a bar. And I was I was right up against the stage. I didn't even show up that early, like, comparatively to when, like, people show up for shows in the pop punk scene. Like, I showed up, like, half an hour before doors, and I was the second person in line. And I got set list, And I met her after very briefly, but I got to like say hello. It was, oh my God, it was literally insane. I cried so hard that my fake eyelash came off.
I'm so jealous. I remember when she released like the limited edition East Coast dates, and I'm like, this isn't even close to where I am.
I know. It was like she came to North Carolina a couple months ago, and I said to my mom, I was like, oh my God, I'm so upset. My mom was like, North Carolina's not that far away. And I was like, I'm not driving 7 hours.
No.
But then once it was Brooklyn, I was like, yeah, I'll take the George Washington Bridge if need be.
Yeah. That's so brave of you. Could never.
The drive, it was not fun. I did not enjoy driving to Brooklyn, as I have not historically enjoyed driving to Brooklyn. But for Eliza, it was worth it.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah. So continuing to talk about women in indie, we are going to get back into our 2015 pop queens. But before we start on the two that we're going to talk about today, wanted to give a quick note. If you listened last week, I said that we were going to talk about three more. So I did originally plan to talk about Melanie Martinez's 2014 album Crybaby, because it was really prolific on Tumblr, like lyrically, aesthetically. I was a big fan of her at the time, but the more we talked about it, the more we thought about it. We talked a decent amount last week about the idea of not separating an artist from their art when we talked about Lana. And given the allegations against Melanie Martinez, I just felt that it wouldn't really be appropriate to continue platforming someone that has chosen not to take responsibility for something that has been alleged and whose fan base has really mistreated the person who came forward with their statement. So I don't want to get into that, even though I find the album itself interesting. It's just not a topic that we want to over-exaggerate. And we'd much rather spend the time talking about our two unproblematic queens of this week, who we still love to this day and that we both stand very hard.
Yeah. I don't think that Crybaby is really worth talking about now when we have Halsey and Lorde.
Yeah, they will always be famous. And I will say, like, what I found in my research about Crybaby was interesting about the power of the fandom in the charting, but it is not nearly as culturally impactful as either of the two albums we're going to talk about today. And certainly she has not maintained the mainstream popularity that Lorde and Halsey have. So
yeah,
we are super excited to get into these two albums, because I don't know, I think these might be my two favorite that we're talking about. I know your Marina's Electra Heart is really there for you.
Yeah. But I do love Badlands, and I feel like I don't want to spoil what we're talking about. But who are we going to talk about first?
Ooh. Carly talked about Marina last, so I'm going to start today talking about Halsey, which is so exciting for me. because I have been a Halsey fan for a long time. Like, we're bordering on 10 years.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go all in on this, okay? So, of course, the album I'm going to be focusing on today is Badlands, Halsey's 2015 first album release. And so I will start by telling all of you how I got into Halsey personally and why I know so fucking much about this album. So I first discovered Halsey through an audio post on Tumblr when her song Ghost was circulating around, which I found through my research was originally uploaded independently to iTunes as her first single before she got taken on by her record label. So I listened to Ghost in an audio post and I was like, damn, this girl is cool. And then I went to find her music and she had the Room 93 EP.
Yes.
So without going overboard into the Room 93 EP, I do want to give a little bit of context to it. So Room 93 was released in 2014, and it is a 5-song EP. It's got Is There Somewhere, famously a favorite of mine, Ghost, her first single, Hurricane, which is a really popular Halsey song, Empty Gold, and then Trouble, the stripped version. And this EP was really popular on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And not just because it's a really good EP, but because it came with a video series, somewhat like Electra Heart. Halsey released visuals for all 5 songs. 2 of them are just like 30-second visuals, but the other 3 are full-fledged music videos. And the music videos follow a couple from 1997 until they're adults. And it's all in this motel, the Pink Motel, and they stay in Room 93. And it's about, you know, this teenage girl and her boyfriend, and like they have a little bit of a tumultuous relationship, and then they go back and they, it's a whole thing. But the girlfriend in the scenario is played by Halsey. And essentially what it's reenacting is her relationship with Maddie Healy, which happened a lot in hotel rooms, which is why the whole thing is about like a motel room. And there are extensive Tumblr posts analyzing exactly which lyrics are about Maddie Healy and why. And I certainly did fall down a wormhole of these posts.
Wait, for the listeners that don't know, who is Maddie Healy?
Maddie Healy is the lead singer of the 1975. And Halsey was a Tumblr girl themselves. And so they were on Tumblr in the era that Maddie Healy was like king of Tumblr. Like, if there was ever a white boy of the month, it was him.
Yeah.
And Halsey was known on Tumblr as 17 Black and had blogged about Maddie Healy during their whole relationship. She would post like poems on Tumblr. There's this one really like famous in the Halsey community, this like long, basically love letter she wrote about him that did that thing where the attribution isn't like where it's from. It's like another line of the poem.
Yeah.
And the attribution line says, I don't care what he is, I just care that he is. It's so good. Halsey also was briefly Tumblr famous for writing the Haler hate song about Harry Styles and Taylor Swift, because Miss Ma'am was a Directioner.
Oh my god, I didn't know that.
You didn't? Halsey was a Directioner.
That makes sense. I mean, the best of us were.
But while Halsey was in their Tumblr era, they wrote and then released Badlands, their first album. So it was identified as an alt pop or a dark pop album, which I thought was a really interesting way of describing it. So what was really insane about Badlands, more so I think than the album itself, was the lead up to the album. So Halsey created this whole world around the Badlands. Halsey said in an interview right when the album came out that the setting of the album, the Badlands, is like a metaphor for their mental state. So she says, Badlands is kind of like my only universe. I think it's representative of a state of mind. For me, there's a booming metropolis inside of Badlands. That's where my cognitive activity happens, and that's where I've been living, if you will, for the past few months. Then ultimately, I made the decisions to leave and venture out into the wild, isolated wasteland that surrounds Badlands. It's just wide open desert. So it is my universe. It's just my universe as interpreted by me. And so,
interesting.
I know, right?
So is that the outside of the Badlands that she's talking about? Is that what the album is about, or is it about the inside the Badlands?
It's about leaving the Badlands.
Oh, okay.
So there was this teaser trailer for the album that was like absolutely iconic that came out, I want to say only a couple weeks before the album came out. And the teaser trailer was this like dark, kind of gritty, almost like pseudo threatening like vibe. So it shows scenes from what will then be the Ghost music video. The city's kind of like giving Tokyo, but then there's just desert outside of it, which the lore is later than that Badlands is near the kingdom, which whatever. But in this teaser for Badlands, Halsey says, "Hello and I'm sorry, a salutation and a farewell. I don't have much time." And then she goes on to talk about the city. There was a line that revolutionized my life in 2015 where she says, "The city is disgusting, a corpse of what it used to be. The people are filthy, gluttonous, ruled by the power exchange of sex from the hands of the proletariat to the bourgeoisie." And that was the first time I ever heard the word bourgeoisie.
Halsey introduced you to class consciousness.
Literally. And then more of the prologue goes on to say, "There are some here I love, some who fear me, and some who wish I was dead. I didn't ask for this. No one asks for this." And then she goes into, if this were a movie, I would ride off in some blood red sunset down a stretch of desert road into the wasteland that keeps us captive here. But this isn't a movie. These are the Badlands."
God, so dramatic.
It was insane at the time. So some other things she did leading up to the album, she had a pop-up shop called Badlands Air where people went, and it was like a travel agency, and they got postcards and fake flight tickets, and it was like, "Thank you for traveling to the Badlands." And it was like, there was a Twitter account called Visit Badlands. And then she did Badlands Hair, where she invited kids to a hair studio in London and dyed their hair the color of the album. She gave away these things for Badlands Prep High School. That was like a bumper sticker that said, like, "My child goes to Badlands Prep."
I do remember that.
The merch went crazy for this album. But this is all just the lead up. And I hung on to every single bit of this when I was on Tumblr. I was like experiencing all of this as it was happening, which is why when we talked last week about like the lead up to Electra Heart, I was like, "Oh my God, this is just like what happened with Badlands."
Yeah. I don't remember the specifics about the lead up to Badlands. I do remember the night before when I was waiting for it to be released on maybe Spotify at the time, but I think it was Spotify, but I remember finding on Tumblr a link to a Google Drive.
Oh my God, yes, the leak.
Yes, and I remember.
I totally forgot.
It was hours before it was about to be released, and I'm like, "No, I'm going to listen to it right now."
Yes. Okay, so in how crazy it was to like have this album, I want to just read off the track list just to give like a sense of what was on the album, because it's like a story album. It goes chronologically. So we've got Castle, Hold Me Down, New Americana, Drive, Hurricane, Roman Holiday, Ghost, Colors, Colors Part 2, Strange Love, Coming Down, Haunting, Gasoline, Control. And then the deluxe album had Young God and I Walk the Line. And every song on this album is a banger. Let's just start there. This is a 5-star album. This is a no skip album. This is possibly one of my favorite albums of all time. But basically, in this chronological story, it starts with Halsey singing about, "There's an old man sitting on the throne telling me I should probably keep my pretty mouth shut." It's about like this kind of gatekeep of power from women. And she says in an interview that it's also sort of like a metaphor for the music industry of people who don't want her to use her voice the way she does. She actually says in one interview that this is a female rage album.
Slay.
Which is maybe why we loved it so much. So like she said in that interview, that it kind of goes in order until she decides to leave the Badlands, and then it's all about her trying to get out. And one of the slogans for the album was "Just Keep Running," which then later came up when she did the album's 5-year anniversary. There were messages being sent out that said "Keep Running." But I'm literally getting so excited that I like can't keep a straight thought. I hope
I'm following. Everyone... I'm following.
I hope everyone can tell my like tangible passion for Halsey. Okay. So let's talk like singles, because I think those will give like the clearest concept of the album. So there was Ghost, which is about a relationship that has changed so much that you don't even recognize this other person anymore. And the music video for Ghost, like I said, it's on the Room 93 EP, and there's a music video for it for the EP, but then she does one for the album. And instead of having a boyfriend in the video, she has a girlfriend this time. And she said in an interview that this wasn't actually like a really like intentional choice. It was that someone in an exec room asked, so who are we going to cast as the boyfriend? And she said, why does it have to be a boyfriend? And that's why there's a female lead in that music video.
I love that.
But Halsey is iconically a bi icon. And this is a tangent piece, but in so many interviews from this era, the New York Times included calls her a tri-bi, which stands for biracial, bisexual, bipolar. And she has said, I think many times since then, she was like, I don't know where the fuck that came from. Like, I did not say that. That's a weird as hell term to use.
Yeah, I remember that term. And I thought, like, did she come up with that? It was never really clear.
Very much not. Even because she spoke openly in some interview that she was like, oh, this is the first time I've really talked about being bipolar publicly. And then someone like took that and ran with it. But I digress. The other singles for the album, Castle being the first track on the album, was I think the last single, which then kind of transitioned into the next album era, which I won't get into, but was equally exciting for me. There was also New Americana. So this was a really fun song. It was kind of like, I don't remember if it ever really hit the radio. I feel like it might have for a minute, right?
It definitely did. I know because Ty knows the song. He's not a Halsey fan.
He should be. I feel like he should need to fix this. But New Americana was taken on by the media as the lyrics famously are, we are the New Americana, high on legal marijuana, raised on Biggie and Nirvana, we are the New Americana. And people were like, oh my God, this is so representative of today's youth. Like, and Halsey said in an interview, she was like, yeah, duh. I buzzworded you guys on purpose. I wanted you to know how ridiculous it sounds. Damn. Like, and she got us. I love that she did that kind of like tongue in cheek of like, this is what everyone thinks of my generation, that like, where these kids who are like, oh, we have legal drugs that we're always on because we're so glamorous. And like, it's all about being the outcasts in a city who are actually the cool kids. Like, It's very Tumblr-esque. It's very, like, romanticizing your life, but also acknowledging all the, like, weird flaws of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's Colors. And Colors, honey, you will always be famous to me. So Colors is probably her most well-known lyrically, I think, even if people don't know that they know this is where the lyrics are from. So if you yourself, listener, are unfamiliar with Colors by Halsey, it's a really awesome song that some speculate is also about Maddie Healy. But the most famous lyric from this song is the bridge, where she says, you were red, and you liked me because I was blue. You touched me and suddenly I was a lilac sky, and you decided purple just wasn't for you.
Iconic.
Like, imagine the number of times this was redone on Tumblr with pictures of sunsets, with solid backgrounds in the classic Helvetica New Italic fold. It was put on everything you can imagine, because like, this was at the time that, like, Rupee Kaur poetry was starting to become a thing over on Instagram. And, like, on Tumblr, that poetry was not popular. Sylvia Plath was popular. And so, like, it was a bunch of teen girls with, like, overly intense literary tastes. And then this absolutely visceral image that's, like, basic enough for teenagers to latch onto, but also feels deep enough to suit our pretentious needs. Like, it was the perfect recipe for an iconic lyric.
Yeah. We Tumblr girls really loved that song. And I reblogged every single post I saw with those lyrics on it.
You had to because it was just so prolific, because it was such a perfect visual metaphor, which we talked about in the last episode, is that being an image-based platform, Tumblr, you really had to suit the aesthetic needs. Mm-hmm. So I will also just give a glimpse at some of the other iconic lyrics from the album. In Hurricane, they have, "I'm a wanderess, I'm a one-night stand, don't belong to no city, don't belong to no man. I'm the violence in the pouring rain, I'm a hurricane."
I forgot about how good that those lyrics were for on that album.
And she was like 18.
Yeah.
Like,
she really did that.
Maybe she was 17. I don't know how old she was. Fair. I think she was maybe 18.
This podcast is not for facts.
No.
True Tumblr style, just opinions. Founded on loose reality.
All extrapolation from one or two articles.
Yeah.
But some favorites for me from the album, I think Roman Holiday is severely underrated.
I remember that Carly being one of my favorites.
Yes. Carly and I actually saw Halsey on the tour for her second album, Hopeless Fountain Kingdom, and she did play Roman Holiday, and I remember being so fucking excited because I love that song. There's also Gasoline, which she still plays to this day. I have had the supreme privilege of, I saw Halsey twice last year, and she plays Gasoline live, and it goes nuts.
Damn.
And then also Young God and I Walk the Line. Okay, I know that they're only part of the deluxe album, but Young God is so good.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about, like, the like, high that you get with being with another person that, like, other people can't really believe that you're with them. And, like, in this moment, it's just the two of you and you're powerful. Oh, such a good song.
Is it also about Maddie Healy?
It's speculated.
Yeah. I loved Walk the Line because I love a cover.
Yes, yes.
And pretty much, I think maybe all, if not most, of the artists we've talked about have covers on their albums.
Yes.
I know Florence does, Lorde does. I don't, Marina didn't. Lana probably has done another cover.
Lana has done covers, but I forget of what.
Yeah, I don't know either. I love a cover.
Yeah.
Especially when it's an old song that is not done a lot. Because I feel like there are certain songs that have been covered to death.
Yeah.
But the artists that we've been talking about really know how to do a cover.
They have deep cuts.
Yeah.
The last thing I will say about Badlands is when she put out the Colors music video that had Tyler Posey in it.
Oh my God. I forgot about Tyler Posey's cameo.
That was like my break the internet. Okay. It was a music video. You should just go watch it. I won't even spoil the plot twist. But it has Tyler Posey in it. It's got Halsey in her classic blue bob wig. They go to like a prep school. And part of it is filmed in American Horror Story's Murder House. It's just like she literally picked everything and person from Tumblr that she could and was like, I'm going to give these kids what they want.
And she succeeded.
And for that, she will always be famous. And in the mainstream as well. Halsey's like wildly popular now, but she wasn't so much back then. You know, she was kind of our little secret until New Americana blew up, I would say.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, who is Halsey? And it was like, they grew up so fast.
Also because that, she was on Tumblr. Like,
yeah.
That definitely.
Before then.
Yeah. That definitely made it seem like she was one of us. And she wasn't going to be mainstream. And we were listening to Room 93 first on the audio posts.
Yes.
Didn't last for long. And I'm so glad that she's so successful now. Like, she really deserves
it. I know. Yeah, Badlands actually, like, it was insane from the beginning. It debuted at number 2 on the Billboard charts, and it is now certified double platinum.
Damn.
So this is just to show what happens when you have a strong Tumblr following.
Yeah.
And the final thing I'll share is this tweet from Halsey in 2020. Someone tweeted pictures of her and said, and that's on 2014 Tumblr. And she replied, laughs in 17 black. And she also tweeted one other time where someone like was basically calling her a poser. And she was like, I didn't get addicted to cigarettes at 17 for nothing. So let's just say that Halsey will always be the Tumblr girl gone famous. Yeah. And Badlands will be an icon forever, especially because of the Colors lyrics.
Yeah, so true.
I talked for a long time, so I'm gonna take a big swig of water before we move into our final pop queen,
and I will be finishing my wine.
All right, tell us about Lorde, the one we've all been waiting for.
Lorde. So I'll be talking about Lorde's first album, Pure Heroine, which was released in 2014, the Tumblr year.
Two women who went off with their first album as teenagers.
Yeah. And, I mean, Lorde was barely a teenager. She was 12 when she signed her record deal, which was, I think,
maybe 12?
12!
I thought she was 16!
She was 12 when she signed her record deal. And I think that, so that was in 2012. I think she was 14 when Pure Heroine was released, which is absolutely insane that she wrote that shit when she was
I'm that fact young. Checking this.
Okay.
She was 16.
Yeah, so she was 16 when Pure Heroine was released.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she was 16, but she was 12 when she signed her record deal.
That's literally insane.
And she was 14 when she released The Love Club, which was her EP. Which
I didn't even know there was an EP.
There was an EP.
Oh, okay. I'll shut up. You talk.
So the EP was released in 2012 called The Love Club. Okay, so The Love Club had Bravado, Royals, Million Dollar Bills, The Love Club, and Biting Down. And I'm pretty sure only Royals and Million Dollar Bills ended up on her album.
Yes, but the other three are on the deluxe version.
That makes sense. So already she had released Royals at age 14.
And that's insane.
What an iconic song. And was that song played a lot on the radio? Absolutely.
Yes.
It still goes hard. It's still not one of those songs that I thought, even at the time where I thought, oh, this is overplayed. I feel like Never. It always was so good. And the lyrics are beautiful. It was amazing.
Even as her most popular song, I have never gotten tired of hearing Royals. It's not one of those things where I'm like, okay, I've heard this 40 million times. Like, it's just as good as the first time, every single time.
Yeah, yeah. And it was number one on Billboard before Pure Heroine was even released. So literally, she started out as strong as possible. And I'll talk about it a little later when I talk about her later albums. But to talk about Pure Heroine, what she said about the album is that she was inspired by minimalist music, electropop, and hip-hop music. She did have a Tumblr called Lorde Music. And I remember her interacting with, like, random posts here and there and doing Q&As. But most of it has been scrubbed and there's, like, 3 posts on it now. Which is, you know, tragedy, but also respect, because I've done the same thing and I'm not famous. So I totally understand where she's coming from. I feel like the reason why Pure Heroine was so like impactful for teens on Tumblr was just because it was about the kid that stayed home, the kid that wanted to go out and party and dance and be reckless, but really couldn't. Also, it makes sense because Lord was 14 at the time. I don't know what kind of, you know, life she led in New Zealand, but I'm doubtful that she was going partying and doing drugs.
If her lyrics are anything to go by, she really was talking about like the idea of an idyllic reckless teen life and then the reality of being a kid who stays at home to please their parents.
Yeah. And her, like, on Tumblr, her songs were usually paired with, like, a plain black background or the gridded background. That one was pretty widespread. I think it went along with just the look of the album. Like, it was just plain black 1975 style. And, you know, it really worked.
It did. There was also that really popular image of two kids climbing like a chain link fence.
Yes.
That her lyrics always got put over.
Yeah, I know the exact one you're talking about. And I remember looking at that at the age of 14 being like, I wish that were me. I wish I could sneak out. But I never
And climb
did.
A fence.
I wanted to climb a chain link fence so bad. And for
but
what?
But only
Why?
If it could be documented on a Polaroid camera.
Yeah, and if I was wearing Doc Martens and a flannel around my waist.
Yes. Yes.
It needs to have those requirements. my favorite song, I mean, it's really hard to pick a favorite song from this album because it is another no-skip album. I've been listening to it for the past few weeks. It goes so hard. So hard.
I ask people often, like, what their no skip album is. I think it's like a fun question, but for me, it's always going to be Pure Heroine. Like, I know I just said Badlands is a no skip and I stand by that, but Pure Heroine is like the no skip. Yeah. Like, I deign to say it might be the best album ever written.
I know we were talking about this last week. I'm like, it doesn't compare to anything.
Like, I can't think of another album that is as perfect as this one.
Yeah, I mean, all the sounds were really cohesive in the album. Like, every song really went together thematically and just aesthetically with the way that the music was written.
Yes.
And I know that she didn't write all of the songs by herself, but I'm pretty sure she was involved in writing every song. And, I mean, she was literally 14. So, crazy. You know, if she needs a little... a little collaboration. That
Who
is
are
totally,
we to judge?
Yeah, really. I mean, I digress. My favorite song from the album is probably Ribs. I don't know what it is about it. It's just the vibes. Some lyrics that I wrote down were, "This dream isn't feeling sweet. We're reeling through the midnight streets. And I've never felt more alone. It feels so scary getting old." And that was, like, just that those few lines really kind of encapsulate the whole album. About being a teenager and what it's like. And it really wouldn't have been this way if it wasn't written by a teenager or a preteen.
Yeah. I think also, I always think of the lyric, sharing beds like little kids and laughing till our ribs get tough. I always think of us. Because of the way we used to, like, sleep side by side at sleepovers. That lyric has always made me think of our friendship.
Oh, that's so sweet. I wish I had come with something like that.
comparatively, my favorite off the album is White Teeth Teens.
That's another really good one.
I am so obsessed with that song. There's, like, something about it that... I don't know. It hit so hard as a teenager and it still hits hard now of the idea of, like, I almost think it was the encapsulation of, like, the soft grunge idea of, like, being the good kid is no longer popular. Like, the popular kids are not the jocks and the cheerleaders anymore. It's the weird emo kids are, like, the cool kids because of Tumblr, maybe? Like,
maybe.
I love that song. I love the writing on that.
Yeah, really, the writing on all of these songs is just pure artistry. I really love the lyrics of Royals, and it is her most popular song, I think, for a really good reason. Like, it's just kind of like this combination of all these like lavish ideas. Like, every song's like Gold Teeth, Grey Goose, tripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like Crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair. Iconic.
It's like, it gets like, the listeners can't see it, but I was bopping along to the lyric because it's just like, it's so catchy, but at the same time, actually introspective.
Yeah. And you could really see like the hip hop influences in this song in particular. She almost, I mean, I wouldn't say she's rapping, but she's kind of teetering on the edge.
Yeah. And like the bass and like the beat, I think, take that like hip hop inspo.
Yeah. I think a lot of people now are really harsh on her music, like her more recent music. I personally don't think that it's really possible to do better than Pure Heroine. Like, it was just so good that it's just, it's always going to be hard to top that when that's your first album. I thought Melodrama was great. I haven't listened to her new one, to be honest.
I will say, I think I agree with you that, like, it's hard to top a release like Pure Heroine where every single lyric is absolute fucking perfection. But Melodrama was really, really great. And I think even though I am not, like, a diehard for Solar Power, I still think that she's a really awesome lyricist. And I think people maybe expected her albums to always have the same sound, the same cadence, the same themes, and I think it's actually a really good sign that they don't, because she was, like you said, like literally 14 putting out those first songs. So like, as like a woman in her 20s, like the sound and the metaphor should be much different. And I do like the growth, while it still, it definitely sounds like her, you know, because she takes on that same artistic, reflective, almost like,
I feel like the word that Lana used, like diarist, like writing in a diary.
Yes, so true. And Lorde does it better.
Yeah. Oops.
Like, sorry.
Yeah. And then like, she's 26 now. Like, she shouldn't really be writing about not wanting to grow old and like being scared of getting old. Like, it doesn't really make sense for her now.
That lyric maybe still hits so hard, though.
It does. But I feel like the way that she wrote when she was 14, I mean, it doesn't sound like your average 14-year-old, but it's clear that it's coming from, like, a younger voice.
And that's what made it so easy to connect with as a teenager. It was coming from another teenager experiencing the same online reality as you.
Yeah.
And, like, that same changing world. And only feeling like we were the only ones who understood it because, you know, even your older siblings don't understand social media the way you do when you're like 14 and on Tumblr. Like, it's just those few years difference give you a totally different reality. And her album reflected that.
Yeah. And she's said a lot in interviews about Pure Heroine, like more recently. She's very self-aware of the fact that it doesn't really capture the same, like, her music now doesn't capture the same feelings that her first album did. And this quote, she says, "When I was little, I knew that teenagers sparkled. I knew they knew something children didn't know and adults ended up forgetting. Since 13, I spent my life building this giant teenage museum, mausoleum maybe, dutifully, wolfishly writing every moment down and repeating it all back like folklore. And now there isn't any more of it."
Oh my god.
I know.
I need that. Oh my god. I need to reblog it now.
But, I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. Like, she knows that maybe the best music was about this time of like being a teenager, and that's not something that she can get back into her music. Yeah, and
I don't even know if it's just like my best writings, but it's that like that crystallized experience of like she perfectly captured teenagehood in that album.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's any other era of life you can capture so succinctly. Like,
yeah,
even your 20s are so amorphous and like everyone experiences them so differently that there can never be like one album of the 20s. But like Pure Heroine is the album of teenagerhood.
Yeah. I think really like every teenager thinks they're unique and have these unique problems that nobody else is facing, and that we're just broken. And maybe this is just me. But I really think that so many teenagers, like, we all had the same anxieties and the same fears, mm-hmm. and the same like wants was just to feel like we belonged and to feel like we were doing it right and we weren't wasting it.
In that same vein of like not wanting to waste it, that feeling of that your teen years should be like grandiose in some way. And maybe because of the glorification of certain people's teen years online made us feel like ours were not picturesque enough. And the album captured that too.
Yeah. It captured like what was not being said on mm-hmm. Tumblr, really. It really, like, until that album came out, it was all just this aesthetic that we all aspire to be. But now it's like we can aspire for this different aesthetic that's just these like poetic lines that feel so, I don't know, just lines that resonate so much.
Yeah, I think listening to like Lana and Marina, I wanted to be like more grown up and like having these, for some reason I wanted to say I wanted to be having these troubling experiences, but I do think that is the feeling Lana's music evoked. But with Lorde, it like suddenly, instead of glamorizing traumatic experiences, it felt glamorous to be sitting in my room writing poetry in my notebook that I'm like, oh my God, nobody gets me. Like, that felt cool all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. I'm just thinking about me writing in my diary that I've been thinking about Sylvia Plath a lot.
Guys, Carly went through her diaries recently and found some amazing clips about Sylvia Plath. So if you ever wanted to know what it was like to be a teen girl on Tumblr, just know it really dug in to our psyche.
Yeah. I have been thinking about Sylvia Plath a lot recently, actually.
And so have I. When that's are just we not? What it's like. I was just telling someone recently, a poetry professor said to me that sometimes I'm a little bit too much like Sylvia Plath in my writing.
Oh, no. How are you supposed to interpret that?
Well, I knew exactly what he meant, which is that my poem was daddy issues.
You know, self-awareness is the first step. But yeah, that is all I have on Lorde. Love Pure Heroine. 10 out of 10.
Yeah. What an iconic two queens to spend a whole episode on.
Yes. So, Tori, if you could take all the artists that we've talked about and rate them, well, who are your top three?
Okay. This is pretty easy for me. For me, it's going to be Halsey and then Lorde and then Marina, I think.
That's a solid top three. And do you feel like it's changed at all now? Like,
no, I would say it's pretty the same. Actually, I would say maybe now Marina would be my second and Lorde would be my third. Because like I said, I don't go so hard for her new music as I do for Pure Heroine. And I go really hard for Marina's new music still.
That's totally.
But I will never go as hard for anyone as I go for Halsey, probably until I die.
For me, I don't know. I'm having a hard time. Marina is obviously first. Mm-hmm. And then I would say Halsey and Lana, probably.
Whoa, Lana top three. Even today Lana. Or back then?
Back then, for sure. I still love Lana. I've been listening to Norman fucking Rockwell a lot recently.
Hey, we said in the last episode, that is a valid experience to be having.
I don't know. There's just something about her voice. I can't really get over it.
It's like very, like, it's giving siren.
Yes. And you know how much I love siren. That's a conversation for another episode.
But before we close the door on the pop queens, we have two honorable mentions for this genre.
Yes.
That are not pop queens, but fit in the category nonetheless.
Yes.
And that would be Hozier, who also wrote a Tumblr era No Skip album, which many women related to, because that album has the feminine gaze. It sure does.
Oh, yes, it does. And the bog gaze.
And the bog gaze. It's Baroque pop.
It is Baroque pop. People on Tumblr have been championing for a Florence Hozier collab for so long. It's about fucking time. A Baroque pop duo.
Can you imagine a tour, like a co-headliner of the two of
them? I can't imagine it. It's too much.
Who's our other honorable mention?
Troye Sivan. I feel like I don't remember anything that happened after Blue Neighborhood. Not in general. I mean, like, from Troye Sivan. I realize now that didn't really make any sense.
Oh, I'm keeping all of this in.
But I don't know if you remember this, but one of Troye Sivan's songs from Blue Neighborhood, don't even remember what it was, but I made an edit from the Shadowhunters series of when Alec is walking down the aisle, or is Alec the one? Yeah, Alec's walking down the aisle to marry some girl. I don't know. It wasn't in the book.
Sure.
And Magnus stands up when there's, like, when the question is, like, you know, does anybody object? And I put it to a Troye Sivan song. And it got a lot of notes on Tumblr. I think it got, like, 5,000. It was something from Blue Neighborhood. I'd have to double check. I think it was Youth. I think that was, like, his big song. I want to say that was it, but don't quote me on that. But if you saw that on Tumblr, that was me.
Blue Neighborhood was an iconic album.
It was.
Yeah. So two non-queens who deserve the status of pop queens.
Yeah.
And then to close out, we thought we would give a little shout out to some of today's indie pop queens, because the scene of indie pop queens has grown. And I think
so
all of the women that we talked about in the last two episodes have kind of paved the way for these women to have the, like, mainstream popularity that they have now. So some of the queens of indie pop I'm really loving these days include Ethel Kane, is my, like, big fave of the moment. Eliza McLam, I think, categorizes as indie pop. Lizzie McAlpine. And I'm also really into Rebecca Black. She's a little bit more hyper pop than she is indie pop, but I think she still deserves the shout out.
Yeah. I feel like hyper pop is, it could be indie. It could be considered indie.
Well, we didn't give spotlight to Charlie XCX, so.
Oh, well. I feel like my favorite female artist, I really only listen to female artists. That's, like, very misandrist of me. But my favorites are probably Mitski. I've always loved a good sad girl. Mitski. I also been really liking Ethel Kane recently.
Yes.
I listened to a lot of Angie McMahon, who opened for Hozier once, and she was great. Another artist that opened for Hozier, Japanese Breakfast.
Yes.
Who absolutely love her book. Crying in H-Mart. If you haven't read it, go read it. I also like Sir Chloe, and I would say Sir Chloe, you've probably know at least one of her songs. She's had a few like TikTok viral songs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I would say those are the top ones I'm listening to now.
Yeah. So if anyone has any other like cool indie women that they think we should be listening to, definitely send them our way, because as is evidenced by the last 2 hours of podcasting content that we have put out, we love women in indie.
Yes, we do. With all that said, thank you so much for listening. We are so excited to have you here and hope you tune in again next Thursday. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Our Instagram is at xtumblrgirlspod. Our TikTok is at xtumblrgirls. And we, of course, have a Tumblr. You can find us there at xpodcastgirls.tumblr.com. And we kindly ask that if you're enjoying the pod, to give us a rate or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us connect with the rest of the world's ex-Tumblr girls. Come, join, be our bestie, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.